Good day to you. I'm Lana. You're watching 314. This video interview is also available in audio format from our archives at redice.tv. My guest is Gorgo, and she's going to talk about how the alt-right cured her depression. Don't miss this talk from Down Under next. Gorgo, identitarian Australian YouTuber, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Lana.
It's nice to connect with you. So how did you get into the alt-right nationalist movement to begin with?
Well, for me, the gateway was feminism. So I started to have some doubts about feminism, and I came across some videos on YouTube, particularly by Milo, who I'm sure most of you are aware of. Yeah. I have mixed feelings about him now, but anyway, he was a good gateway. And from there, I just started to find videos by Red Ice, Richard Spencer, and from there, I just came to find the alt-right, and I identified with them.
Oh, nice. And what about your upbringing? What kind of home did you grow up in?
Well, I grew up in a very Christian upbringing. I actually, for a while, went to Bible college to study to become a minister. So I have a very, I guess, a very strong conservative background in general. But of course, during that time, I actually lost my faith and got stuck in an abusive relationship, and things took a pretty terrible turn from there. Yeah.
Now, were you ever pulled into liberalism? I know a lot of people in the alt-right at one time, they were sucked in by a lot of these things. A lot of women have been sucked into feminism without realizing it. How about you?
Definitely. Well, after I left that relationship, and I actually ended up going to film school. And so, of course, as a lot of us know, the whole arts education scene is extremely left-wing. And I think from there, I started to get exposed to ideas of feminism. And from there, I became quite left-wing. I was never totally down the rabbit hole. I was never insane, but I did become quite a strong and proud feminist at that time. Yeah.
That's funny. So looking back, are you like, oh my gosh, I was such an idiot?
Yeah. I see that for me, it was really setting myself up for failure because I was struggling with a severe depression at the time, and that went on for about 10 years. And I see now, looking back, that that whole left-wing way of thinking, and particularly feminism, was keeping me trapped in this idea that I was a victim. And it gave me a way to constantly put the blame on other people for things that had gone on in my life. And it, you know, I had come from an abusive relationship, so feminism allowed me to be angry at men. It indulged that part of me. And so it really stunted my ability to overcome and become happy again.
That's right. You've done a video on how becoming conservative, basically, and not cuckservative or conservative, all right, basically how it saved you from your depression. So you weren't depressed before, right, when you were kind of more conservative or going the Christian route. It was kind of after you went into liberalism and feminism, correct? So what was the cause of your depression there?
Well, it's quite complicated in the sense that I do know that there is a genetic aspect to mental illness and depression. And I do think that there were some traumatic things that happened in my life and perhaps in my upbringing. Because there was some mental illness in my family, I wasn't shown the correct way to cope in life. And then from there, I think just there's something about feminism and left-wing ideologies that just kind of, it's like a breeding ground for mental illness. And I'm sure a lot of us will know that there is a lot of mentally ill people in the left wing. And I think it kept me as a victim. And then what probably made it even worse was I actually did stand-up comedy for a few years.
Oh, wow.
And I know. I'm
trying to picture that.
It's a very left-wing scene. If you think arts education's left-wing, the comedy scene, particularly in Australia, is just extremely left-wing, and I'm sure that there are actually a lot of people from the scene who are involved in Antifa. And that kind of just made it even worse for me. And particularly with a lot of comedians, they really indulge that kind of self-deprecating sense of humor. And so for someone like me with depression, that was kind of celebrated, that I was this perpetual victim and stuck in this mindset.
It's funny how even in the comedians, they think they're so edgy and daring, but, you know, they won't make fun of certain things that would get them called a white supremacist or a Nazi, or we can't laugh about that, right?
Exactly. They don't mind making fun of Christians, but Muslims are off the table. They are a protected minority in Australia.
Yeah, I want to ask you that. Millennials, they're extremely nihilistic. We're seeing that everywhere. A lot of these young kids, they feel everything is meaningless and hopeless. What do you think is the cause of that in the millennial generation?
Well, I think that a large part of what's going on is that we have abandoned traditional values. And so from my experience, what I identify as traditional values is an embracing your ethnic identity. Our ancestors did not have a problem with doing this. They were very proud of their ancestry, their history, their culture. They were proud of who they are. And also an embracing of family, which I see as the key to all of this, is to embrace family and having children and embracing gender roles. So what I find interesting is a lot of people forget that things are traditional because they have been tried and tested and they have been proven to work.
That's right.
And so I find that what's happened is as people have abandoned the wheel, like it's already been invented, our ancestors have shown us what at this stage we believe to be the most effective way to live your life. And when you abandon that and essentially tell people you have to reinvent the wheel on your own in your short lifespan of, if you're lucky, 80 to 90 years, I think that's a horrible pressure to put on yourself. And so people are left with the sense of they have to redefine why they should even bother getting up in the morning. And so I think when people go to their jobs that they might hate, they don't have this sense of, I'm going because when I go to my job, it helps me to provide for my family. And when they, you know, lie awake in bed at night and they're plagued with this sense of, what does this all mean? Or what's the purpose of even being alive? They don't have a sufficient answer because they've been told that traditional values and ideas are stuffy and old and will make you miserable. But it's actually the opposite, I think.
Yeah, I've actually heard people say, well, that's an old way of thinking. Thinking about family units and tribes and nations is ancient knowledge, and it's classic, and it's not going to be going away anytime soon. A lot of these lefties actually think that they can destroy those things, these ancient old concepts. Exactly. Nature put them there for a reason. We have those instincts and drives for a reason. It's been tried and proven, and it works, and it's what makes us happy as a people, makes us more unified. Exactly.
Yeah, I agree.
So what's really the solution to remedy their pain, these millennials that are feeling nihilistic? I mean, how do we even go about reaching them and teaching them some of these things?
Well, from my experience, it's talking about these issues. I think I've spoken to some people who describe themselves as left-wing, and they watched that particular video about how becoming conservative saved me. And they've said to me, you know what, you said a lot of things that I never thought about. So for a lot of these people, they've just never thought about it. They've never heard these things framed in that way. And so I think what is really helpful is kind of normalizing it and just being a living example of those ideas. So people who knew me, for example, before my change, they knew how much I was struggling in my life. And so for me to be able to say, this has really helped me, this has given me a reason to get up in the morning, it means something to people. And I think that when you're trying to reach people, most people are driven by feelings. Even people who say that they're driven by statistics, they're the kind, you kind of need to first emotionally get to that point where you're open to hearing the ideas. And so I think making an emotional and honest connection with people and saying to them, you know, are you happy? Are there things that kind of plague your mind? You know, when you're lying awake at night in bed, do you have questions? Do you have doubts about the meaning of life? And just having a real honest conversation, because I have total faith in what I believe, and I have total faith that it works for majority of people. And I think in having that faith, I don't mind having an honest conversation about these ideas with people.
Yeah, something I've heard from quite a few people, that once they found the alt-right, reconnected with tribe and traditionalism and the ways of our ancestors, that it was actually more of a spiritual experience for them, that they felt fulfilled on even deeper levels, which brings me, do you want to comment on that?
Yeah. Oh, man, sorry, it's just that it's so true. I almost feel like a born-again Christian in what I have found. And I don't know if people necessarily understand how incredibly powerful the message of the alt-right is. It's not just about some of the, you know, highlighting the negative sides of society and you know, all of that kind of thing. This is a way for people to find happiness again, and particularly for white people who for a long time have a sense of guilt about who they are. And I'll tell you, the amount of times I talk to people who, when they describe their background, and these are white people, they describe it as basically nothing. They think that being of British descent or Scandinavian descent is basically nothing. So these are people who have been, in a sense, emotionally abused. They don't even think who they are is anything of value. Yeah. And that's just absolutely disgusting. So when you give people the freedom and the permission to be excited about their ancestry and their history, it's hard to describe to someone how powerful that is. So for someone like me, for example, I'm the kind of person that really struggled to find my identity. I couldn't figure out where I fit in everything. And once I discovered the alt-right, I found my place in everything, and I started to have a sense of pride about who I am and where I come from. And that was incredibly healing. And it's probably the most positive aspect of the alt-right, I think.
It's true. And the other thing is, people, once they connect with other people who talk and think like this, fellow alt-righters, they have meaningful relationships and meaningful friendships. And for so long, I know a lot of white girls in particular have struggled with that. So a lot of relationships have become superficial. I hear from men who feel that they actually have a tribe and a brotherhood again, and women that feel like they actually have good female friends that they can actually talk to. It's a sense of family and a sense of community, something that we actually haven't had in our hyper individualistic societies, right?
Absolutely. I've met some wonderful people recently, and it's so amazing to feel part of a tribe in the sense of how our ancestors would have felt. It's no longer a sense of needing to have even religion to bring you together with people. It's my blood that brings me together with people. And I don't know, I'm so excited about that. And whenever I start to feel a little bit down, I just think about, holy crap, I am a mosaic of all my ancestors. I'm a mosaic of lifetimes lived. Like, how trippy is that? And then connecting with other white people and being able to share in this experience, it gives life flavor again, you know?
Yeah, it's true. Stephen McNallan, I don't know if you're familiar with him. He's written some great books. He's going to be doing some videos for us, but he talks about this concept too. Yeah, we're all those that have gone before, which is pretty amazing if we can learn to tap into that. It's like all those people before are in your blood, in your cells, in your DNA, and that's quite amazing, I think.
It's insane, yeah.
Now, do you think on the flip side that there's people that are clinging to egalitarianism as a religion in order to find some kind of fulfillment and some meaning in our nihilistic kind of white society?
Yeah, I find egalitarianism is kind of like feminism with a little bit less of the junk. You know, it's a little bit less harmful, but it still really indulges this idea that there is such a thing as all people being equal and the genders being totally equal. And I find that it's a delusion, and it stops people from accepting some of the realities in life. Like, I am not equal to a man, and in ways men are not equal to me. And I think once people accept that, it's actually so freeing. So, for example, I work. I don't have the luxury of being able to stay at home yet. And I get so tired, and I kind of hate the environment, to be honest, of working. And I realize that hormonally, I'm not even really built for this kind of lifestyle. I'm not really built to go to work and be competitive. Mm-hmm. And so these kind of, this whole bizarre idea of us being equal and basically the same, it really keeps you in a prison. So it's not even helpful to people, to be honest. I think I would much rather just be free to be a woman and just accept that there are things that I am biologically just not built to do, and that's totally fine.
Yeah, I think that's why a lot of these feminists are just miserable and depressed. They're trying to act like men, have sex like men, work like men, and exactly, we're not built that way mentally, emotionally, in so many ways. We're not built to just be workhorses and always be in those environments and always be intellectual. We're more emotional. We need more beauty. We need things that actually make us feel good, right?
Exactly. I know. I think also for me, coming to terms with being okay to do things like a woman, you know, in the alt-right, for example, there's a lot of men in the movement, and it's very tempting for someone who has a message and wants to communicate and connect with people. You see the men doing it and you almost are tempted to model what they do. But I always have to remind myself that I'm not a man, and I don't need to do things that the way men do, and it's possibly not even effective for me to do that. So it's actually been a learning process for me to say that I don't need to be like, I guess an example would be Millennial Woes or Richard Spencer. I don't need to be those people. I just need to be me as a woman.
That's right. You have to do what feels natural. And if you're going into areas where you're starting to feel miserable or something doesn't feel right or it's exhausting or it's making you down, you probably need to step off and kind of rethink your approach. That's kind of what I do anyway. And I know sometimes if I'm into political topics way too much and don't do the little things that women like to do or attend to things that are around home and things aren't organized right, I feel out of, you know, cattywampus, and I don't feel happy in that place.
Exactly. Yeah, it's been, I think you're a great example for a lot of women. I know that when I watch women like you and Tara McCarthy, I think that's her name,
Tara.
Is it?
Uh-huh.
I see you guys, or you women, I should say, and I'm really inspired by the way that you both communicate the message, and it's so wonderfully womanly, and that's really inspiring for me.
Yeah, and just how guys need their man talk and their man cave, women need the equivalent of that. And that's something that I'm seeing happening in the alt-right. I'm talking to lots of women. I get lots of messages from women. There's meetup groups around. Women need to talk about being a woman. They need to talk about how to hold a baby when you're breastfeeding. I mean, women need that place, and they need friends that are talking like we do, that they can relate to, that they can be themselves with and be open and honest and not have to worry about being called a racist or a white supremacist or a Nazi. We need those little environments, you know. It's good to...
Exactly.
Girls need their girlfriends. It's very important. There's certain things you can't talk to with your husband, and just like guys need their guy friends, you know.
Yeah, and the thing that I've actually noticed recently is I find that part of the power of being a woman in this movement is I find that a lot of women are very sensitive to, I hate to use this word, but I can't think of another word, the energy in a movement. We're very good at picking up the kind of, the energy that we put forward. And I find that quite interesting. So, for example, I will feel things in the movement that I think are not very attractive to people on the outside. So if there's like a strong focus on negative things, I get a sense of that. And I don't know, I think that's something that women are very good at. We're very intuitive to different things like energy in the movement.
It's true. Guys can be around negative things. They can look at negative topics and take it on because they're a warrior, they're masculine, this is what they're built to do. Women, we can't be around too much negativity. We receive everything, we're intuitive, we carry a lot, so it becomes too much, we get so emotional. So with that, I'm curious, looking from the outside in as a woman, to offer some constructive criticism, what are both, constructive criticism and good input that you have for the alt-right as a movement, where it's at right now?
So with the movement, I think what people need to really understand is that people are attracted to a movement that promises a better way of living and promises to them a greater sense of purpose and progress, safety and happiness. And so really becoming, I guess, a physical example of those things will attract more people into the movement. And particularly with people who are very new to these ideas, don't focus too much on the negative aspects. So, things like perhaps mass immigration, all those kind of trigger points for a lot of people. Focus on the idea of being able to feel good about who you are, and talk about how you're basically a mosaic of all your ancestors and all this these lifetimes that have been lived. Focus on the really good things that make people feel good about themselves. And another thing is to just be a normal human being. I notice there are some people in the alt-right who don't mind just calling black people the N-word just in normal conversation. And I think to someone on the outside, like if your whole purpose is to help people to become empathetic to what you're saying and your ideas, when you say things like the N-word, it really puts people off unnecessarily. So I really think that people need to just reconnect with, why would you join the alt-right? What is the purpose of this whole thing? It has to come from a place of love. It has to come from a place of people need to feel like you actually care about them. And if we focus only on anger, people don't get that sense that you actually care about them. And this is something that I constantly have to work on in myself. Like I have to look at people, white people, and say to myself, do I actually care about this person and their well-being? And if I don't, I need to work on myself. I need to make sure I'm doing this for the right reasons and then come back to that person, because people know when you care and they'll respond much more positively.
That's right. We have to be,
when they get that sense.
You have to be kind and you have to be thoughtful and you have to be diplomatic. You can't come out like a steel fist. You can't come out too preachy. You can't come out too harsh. There's some people who have been into it for a long time, for 5 years. So they're like way deep down there, and we forget that the new people coming in, they need the 101 stuff. So you're here screaming about something that's really complex, like, master degree level into this. And there's someone who's like at preschool level. Yeah, you have to take it back to the basics. You have to be soft. You have to be gentle. Mm-hmm. And also as far as, having crass language and whatnot. Exactly. I mean, you have to have some class, some finesse, and some thoughts you just harbor privately, or you talk about those things at home. You don't have to think all your private thoughts out loud, but that's what a lot of young people do now with social media. And also the other thing is we have the liberating experience for white people. We have that. Liberals don't have that anymore. They're all about, it's a whole other religion, all these things you can't do, all these things you can't say, whereas we want to liberate them from any feelings of guilt, and we offer that experience where they can be totally free of those things.
Exactly. It's what we have to offer is incredible. It is amazing. It's almost foolproof. I mean, who doesn't want to feel proud of who they are? And so I'm very excited about this message, because I know, as I mentioned before, I had clinical depression for about 10 years and I was in such a state. And for me to now be able to say that I'm medication free, that I'm happy, that I am a normal functioning member of society because of this movement, there are probably so many white people out there who are just dying for something like this. They're desperate, like I was desperate for something. And I just think that we need to, be so proud of what we have to offer and go forth with that.
It's true. Unconsciously, white people have been victims of abuse. We're the true victims.
Yeah.
Young kids from a young age, they have to hear about the Holocaust and slavery and how evil your ancestors were. That's going to affect you on unconscious levels. Every psychologist knows that. So there's a level of deprogramming that's there. I mean, we're guilted right away from a young age these days by these Marxist teachers. The other thing is, we have to remind people what our culture is. What is our ancient civilization like? What did our ancestors venerate? What is our art? What is worth preserving about Western civilization? Mm. Because all we hear about is, colonialism and slavery and Nazis. And so we need to be able to remind them what it is so that they even have the urge to save it. Because at this point, some people, they don't even know. They're not taught these things. They don't research. Their parents don't tell them these things. So they just think, what is white culture anyway, right?
Yeah, I know. I was one of those people for a long time. I have to say that part of my journey, I can thank my fiancé, he has been involved in the white nationalist movement kind of on and off for a number of years. And even before I came to these ideas myself, he was very supportive and he was teaching me things. I was one of those people who would say, my background is basically nothing, and I've learned so much over this time. And you think people know about those issues? You think people know about how white people essentially built the modern world, but they don't know that. They honestly, a lot of them don't know that, and they're in complete denial about these things. And it boggles my mind how I know in Australia, in our schools, particularly history, we don't really hear about a lot of these things. We don't hear about the wonderful things that we did. We hear about the Aboriginals and what we did to the Aboriginals. and that's basically your history education right there.
Oh, geez. So you guys grow up with that. And then what about slavery? Do you guys have to hear about that all the time? What else are you programmed?
Yeah, we do.
And you hear about the Holocaust, I'm sure, in Australia too, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we hear about that. And it's just such a strong, it's so stuck in the white psyche, the Holocaust. Everything we do is, in a sense, about avoiding being compared to Hitler or the Nazis. It's so strong in who we are, and it's just caused so much damage, and it's just trying to repair that image. And I have to make a lot of effort to let people know that I'm not a Nazi, to kind of just get those barriers down, because people won't even open their ears if they get a sense that you are somewhat sympathetic to Hitler or the
Nazis.
Yeah,
that's when you have to ask them, well, can you tell me what the policies of National Socialism are? Because actually, there's a lot of things there that lefties would actually really like.
I've tried to have that conversation with them and they just flip out.
Now, also, you brought up the term white nationalist, which is a newer term. You know, in my husband and I always talk about this. In Europe, you don't say that. You know, it's more in the colonies they said that. Because in Europe, you're just a Swedish nationalist or a German nationalist, because Europe is white and it should be white. And we didn't say that in America either, because before 1965, this was almost entirely a white country. So this is a newer term, but it's really been muddied up, you know, because of stereotypes and movies. We've had feds in the movement, like actually creating, they're like creating some of these groups and creating these bad images. And now, is it like that in Australia? Is it a dirty word? Do people talk about that the same, white nationalism?
Yeah, well, there are people who think that I am genuinely a Nazi, and they, when I tell them that I'm an ethno-nationalist, white nationalist, alt-right, they automatically just have these negative assumptions. They think that I'm a white supremacist, and there's so much work to be done talking with these people and kind of deconstructing what it is exactly that they think I believe. And so I have to make a lot of effort to say things like, I don't hate other races, which I genuinely don't. I don't hate them, but I love my people more. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with it. I think basically every other race is the same. We all favor our own, and I don't think that that's bad. And I always make sure to let people know that part of the reason why I like the idea of ethno-nationalism is because you're allowing every ethnicity to have their own space and their own self-determination of what happens to them and their people. And when you look at people, black people, for example, living in white countries, and one common thing you will hear is that they might say, "When I was a kid, I wish I had white skin." And I thought, what a shame, what a damn shame. If they were in a place where they were surrounded by their own people and not having to share a space with us and compete with us, they wouldn't be having this sense of inadequacy. And it's almost like multiculturalism is making people feel so inadequate with who they are. And I think that that's just totally wrong.
Yeah, people are uprooting and going to these other cultures where they have nothing in common with, and then they kind of go cuckoo. Yeah, and then the other thing is
Yeah.
we keep hearing too about how awful it is to be a minority, the plight of, this group or gays or blacks or Aboriginals or Jews, and then white people are supposed to rejoice becoming a minority. It's like
Yeah,
nobody
no.
wants to be a minority. Being a minority sucks. So we actually offer the
Yeah.
solution here. Each group has their
Exactly.
own country, so it's nothing but them on TV, nothing but them in the magazines, nothing but them in the government. Problem solved, really, right? But then they say, oh,
Yeah.
but then there's going to be conflict. There will be nations fighting. And it's like, look at all the conflict we have now. It's way worse. We're having terrorism like we've never had in Europe before. Europe has essentially been very peaceful for a long time now.
Yeah, it really boggles my mind. And even I know in Australia at the moment, there's talk of having segregated Muslim communities now. And it's like you have to, it's almost like they're trying to make ethno-nationalism within Australia. And it's like, I get it. You want to be surrounded by your own people. You want to feel safe and accepted and not have to look over your shoulder all the time. I want that too. White people want the exact same thing. And it drives me nuts at how it's obvious to people that we operate better when we are in a homogenous society. We operate better, but they're kind of forcing themselves to live in this delusion, and it doesn't work.
The other thing is when we're talking to a lot of these normies, like you were talking about earlier, and they always say supremacist, you have to stay on them, really stay on them, not letting these things slide. Okay, define supremacist. What do you mean by supremacist? Because there's different versions flying around. Some people think it's white people lording over all these non-whites and, with a whip and telling them what to do. That's the visual. Some people have all these Hollywood slave
Yeah.
driver movies. But then to others, when you actually ask, it simply just means white people being a majority in their own countries. I mean, that's pretty
Yeah.
crazy.
And I always say to people that, and as far as white supremacy, I don't think that white people are necessarily the best at everything. I mean, one thing, for example, is we're not great at giving birth to children. Our birth rates are declining. We've really neglected the numbers side of our own people. There are other groups of people who are much more successful at this. So I don't even think it is factual that white people are in every aspect of existence and life supreme. It's just not true anymore. I mean, I do acknowledge that we built the modern world, but that doesn't mean that in every single area of life that we are the best. And I'm quite comfortable saying that. And I think when I acknowledge that with people, they kind of don't really know where to go. Like, oh, wow, okay, so she's not really a white supremacist. Oh, I don't know where to go from here.
Well, the thing is, whites right now are in a really sad state. That's another thing that the alt-right sees. Like, it's been very dysgenic for a long time now, and something needs to be done for the future of the planet here, you know? I mean, look around. It's kind of sad when you see our own race, what they're becoming. I know Australia has that, America. Unfit, slower, not so smart. There's not a lot of really good-looking people anymore. And, I mean, that kind of freaks me out, you know, if it's just going to turn into this race of just short, fat, dumb blobs, you know, like that's not what we want here.
I know. Yeah, it's such a shame to me because there was a time in history where you could look at the white race and think, wow, look at them, look at everything they've achieved. My goodness. I think it was Richard Spencer who said something like, it was only the European race that could put a man on the moon. And there is something so aspirational and inspiring about the European race. And we've lost touch with that. It's such a shame. And I think that this is part of why the alt-right is so powerful, is it helps people to reconnect with that. And I know for me, myself, I've felt like I'm starting to take more pride in what I do. Like I want to keep my house tidy. Things like that. I want to make sure that I'm dressed nicely. I'm wanting to buy clothes that I feel represent what I want to represent better. And there is something in being in the alt-right movement that makes you want to be a better person and take better care of yourself. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. What are some of the things that the alt-right movement offers? Well, a lot of people are interested in health. They talk about good health and fitness, like you said, appearance, keeping the house nice, love, meaningful relationships, family, a sense of tribe. What else do you think? I mean, that's a lot, but what else do you think that we have to offer there?
I think it's the most important thing is something to live for. My goodness, I'm just so excited to be a part of this race. And I think for me, I think for a lot of millennials like myself, we as we've talked about before, we have this sense of, I'm going to die and then that's it. But when I soon or eventually have children, there's a part of me inside someone else. And so when I die, I live on in that sense. And so in that sense, there's immortality. And I think that that is something that's really important to the human spirit. There is something in us that wants to live forever. There is something in us that almost kind of wants to be like this godlike character. And I think that creating a family is one of the only ways that most people can achieve that. And so I would say that is probably one of the best things that the alt-right offers to people.
Absolutely. And the other thing is nowadays with the technology, there's so many cool things we can do to the messages we can record for our future great-great-great-grandchildren, things that couldn't have been done a couple generations ago. I mean, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I mean, we should all be doing that, recording, you know, a vlog, if you will. You know, well, these archives are going to be good for our kids. But,
that's scary.
But, you know, being able to pass that down so that, you know, they can hear what was going on, get the true story, the true history, and leave important messages from them, things that you really want them to hear. I think that that's a really cool idea. We should all be doing that.
Yeah, definitely.
So, you know, a lot of people, you're different. You woke up to these things and it actually cured your depression. But some people, they go through this process of, you know, that born again experience like you're talking about. You know, they're like get on fire. They wake up to these things and then they kind of hit a wall and get into depression because they feel, oh, it's all hopeless. We can't, it's insurmountable. It's closing in on us. What advice would you offer those people?
Oh, well, firstly, I would acknowledge that it's okay to feel down sometimes. I mean, I go through periods myself where I might have a day where I feel down. But in saying that, giving up hope is a luxury that we can't afford anymore. We are in crisis mode. We need everyone on board. We need to be strong. And this is part of how accessing your ancestry and looking at that and looking at inspiring parts of your ancestry, this can inspire you to continue on. We have to be strong. We have lived very comfortable lives because of the sacrifices that other people have made for us. Now it's our turn. Hopefully, we won't need to cop as much strife as our ancestors have, but there's no way around it. We need to pay a price. And I don't think that we can afford to give up hope. And I mean, what's the alternative? If we give up hope, then what? Once you give up hope, then there is no hope. But if you hold on to it, then there's at least always a chance that things can get better. And you may not even see it in your lifetime. It could take future generations to see the results of you being strong. And I think we have to be okay with that, because for our ancestors, they had to be okay with that too.
Yep, that's right. I'd rather die trying. Don't we all want to be welcomed into Valhalla? Well, you have to do great acts to be able to go to Valhalla, folks. You can't just die with a whimper and just, well, I didn't really try because I was afraid of losing my job, or I was too tired, or no, exactly.
Yeah, that's not who emergency, we are. Yeah.
Emergency situation here, and some people don't think that it's bad enough, but it's only going to be getting worse from here on out. So we have to muster up the strength. And I always say too, if you have bad days, if it feels just insurmountable and you feel depressed, we all have that. But that's when it's good to have some friends that you can call up. Take breaks. You need to get away from the computer, get away from some of that stuff, go outside, be in nature, spend time with your family. You need to recharge. You need to take breaks when it starts becoming too much. And then you'll feel fresh again and it feels like a new day, and then you can be fighting some more. Yeah. That's what soldiers do, right? They take time off from the battlefield and then they have to come back.
Exactly. And I know for me that I've started to go outside more. I know it doesn't look like I go outside a lot probably.
But I love your white skin. It's very, very white. It's nice.
Thank you. It is very white. I get some mean comments about that sometimes.
Really?
But, you know. Yeah, and I like to say to people, to a black person, thank you, would you say to a black person, you're too black? Of course not. You wouldn't be able to get away with that. And, you know, it's the same for white people. But I will go on bushwalks and I will listen to, there's a band I think called, is it Wardruna?
And Vardruna, yeah, that's a good one. Yes.
Yeah, I will listen to them and just, it's spiritual. It's a spiritual experience. And this is another aspect of getting in touch with your ancestry and your ethnic identity, is you start to, it becomes spiritual going outside and being in a climate that is similar to what your homeland would be. There's something really therapeutic about that. And I find that when I go on these walks, once I'm finished the walk, I'm a different person, because there is something about nature, the way that it can impact you and kind of communicate with you. It's so deep in our bones.
Yeah.
And I would encourage people, go outside where there are lots of trees, lots of greenery, and just allow yourself to feel the way your ancestors would have felt when they were outside in nature.
Yeah, and I've been in situations where you're with friends and there's a big bonfire, we're all on the same page, and we just take a minute to think about our ancestors. I mean, that's a powerful moment,
nice.
And you do feel recharged when you're with the people. You know, you get some camaraderie, some sisterhood, some brotherhood, and you build each other up, lift each other up. That's the benefit of having tribe, and I think a lot of us have been isolated for way too long. The other thing is, you know, me growing up in America, you in Australia, we've grown up in the colonies. You know, the colonies are away from the motherland. So a lot of Europeans don't know how good they have it, that some of these things are right in their backyard. They can walk where their ancestors walk. They could go to these sacred sites. And I find that people in Europe, the nationalist movement there is healthier, because they're still pretty connected to their culture. They still, you know, they haven't forgotten some of those things. Whereas us in the colonies, I mean, geez, like I'm away from my mother tongue, the language that all my ancestors spoke. You know, I'm far away, isolated. We don't have that same experience. So I almost look at Australia and America and the people there, the white people are almost in worse shape because they've been away from their motherland the longest.
Yeah, and I think once you become, I guess, aware of these issues and you know, join the alt-right as an Australian or an American, you start to get that sense. You think, so for example, this land is extremely, Australia, for example, is extremely spiritual for the Aboriginals, but the European lands, they are very spiritual for me, and I've yet to go over there. I've yet to touch the soil of my own people, and there's a part of me that really aches for that. And I mean, I'm hoping to get to Europe later this year and get to breathe in that air that my ancestors breathed in. It seems like it should be a birthright to have that experience. Yeah,
we need to do some Mecca trips for the colonies, back to Europe, a yearly meetup, you know, whatever. We can go camping, whatever. It doesn't have just to be there. Yeah, it's funny you brought up the Aboriginals. You know, when I lived in Australia for a year, I came around that too. All the white people that talk about the sacred Aboriginals and their sacred land. White people don't view their own land as sacred and think that they don't have a mythology and a spirituality. It drives me nuts. And whites are going to visit these Aboriginals and they want to go have a mystical experience with them. And it's just, it's annoying, isn't it?
It is. It's insane. We've been robbed. And this is how I feel like it's emotional abuse. Because if you talk to people like the Aboriginals, this is extremely important to them. This is their reason for getting up in the morning, is being in touch with their ancestors and their homeland. But for white people, a lot of us haven't been given permission to have that experience. So we're really quite a psychologically traumatized people, I think.
Oh, yeah.
It's very sad.
I wanted to ask you about the current state of Australia. What's going on there with mass immigration, with Islamic immigration? What's the latest?
Well, it's nowhere near as bad as Europe, and it's not even as bad as the US. We are still quite lucky, and, yeah, the situation hasn't got that bad yet, but who knows what the future holds. And I will say that we have one political party called One Nation, and that is basically the most right-wing group we have, and it's got quite a strong nationalist front. And the interest in that party, the support for that party, is actually overtaking the interest in our major left-wing party, which is the Greens. So nationalism is growing in Australia, as I'm sure it is in Europe and the US, and it's becoming a lot more popular. People are talking about it more, and as I mentioned before, there's talk now of Muslim communities having segregated areas for them now, and this of course really goes against a lot of what Australians believe. A lot of Australians believe that they should integrate with us. Now, I have my own thoughts about that. But for Australians, the idea of having segregated communities, it's so disgusting and against who we are. And we kind of imported these people in the good faith that they would become a part of our country and community. And, of course, they don't want to. And why would they? They have their own culture. They have their own way of being. And I think it's quite arrogant how a lot of the left wing think that people are just going to want to come here and just become Westerners. And that's, of course, not how it is.
It's just they're self-righteous and they're arrogant and they think they can make everyone like them and everyone needs to think like them and then the world's going to be a perfect place. Meanwhile, you know, teenage girls are literally getting blown up at concerts. I mean, that is literally happening.
Yeah, that really broke my heart, and I think a lot of us are feeling so betrayed by our leaders, and we are feeling, we feel like there's no hope. We feel like it's going to get worse. But I do have hope, and I do think that even in my lifetime, things, the problem isn't fixed, which it probably won't be. I do believe that what's happening is there's like a pruning, and what's happening is in our race, the white race, we are going to lose the weak, and that's just a process of nature, and we have to accept that and be okay with it, which is why we really need to be strong, because if you want to survive this, you have to be strong, and this is just a process we need to go through. And by the end, only the strong will remain. And I believe that there will be a future for us. And so, yeah, I haven't lost hope.
That's right. It's a different kind of evolution now. We're up against different kinds of pressures. And the kind of person that's being forged right now is going to be very, very tough and lean and mean, and something to be
exactly
reckoned with in the future. So we are in the process of creating that, and it's going to be basically the generation, I think, of our children that are going to be doing some great things, because a lot of the young kids now are waking up to these things pretty fast. It's kind of cool hearing
Definitely.
From some 17 and 18-year-olds who listen to the show. I've been seeing more of that. So that's exciting. That's good.
It is. It is exciting. The interest is growing. And I've heard someone say that if it wasn't for multiculturalism, there wouldn't be nationalism.
That's right.
And so I do believe that as we see more and more multiculturalism, you will only see an increase in nationalism for sure.
Well, I have to ask, you know, many guys, they feel it's hopeless and they're depressed because they feel they can't find a woman who thinks like you. Any advice for those young guys? Or some are older and they're still looking.
Yeah. Well, I will draw from my own experience. So I've been with my fiancé for quite a while now. And when he met me, I was not alt-right. I was quite left-wing. But this is where your own intuition needs to come into play. So for me, I have always been very nurturing. And I think my fiancé knew I wanted to have children before I even knew I wanted to have children, because my motherly nature was just so written all over me that I can't live in denial. And also looking at her character. So is she someone who wants to have a family? Is she someone who is a supportive partner? Is she honest and loyal? Is she someone that you could see yourself growing with? These are much more important in the beginning, because what I have found is that if you as a man, if you are an inspiring person, chances are she will come to believe what you believe. And I just think that that's just a fact of life, is that women in particular are heavily influenced by their men. And when men are inspiring, like my fiance, he's very hardworking. He's stuck with me during my depression. He has just been absolutely incredible. I could not help but take on what he believed. And so I think men need to have that approach, is you may not find an alt-right woman, but that doesn't mean that she wouldn't become alt-right in the future. So just look out for those key character points of a good nature and a good character, and I think the rest will come.
That's true. And a lot of women, the majority of women, aren't extremely political. You would think it if you watch the news and look at feminists that they push, but a lot of women aren't that convinced. They may watch CNN, but they don't really comprehend what's happening there or what's going on. And I know that just based on some of the girls I talk to, that I interact with out in the world running errands, and you know, you ask them questions and kind of test where they're at, they don't really know a thing. So, I mean, a lot of them can be convinced. You can show them the light, and men do have the power of persuasion, especially if he behaves in an irresistible way, and then she just will step into line, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I'm politically aware, but I never try to sell myself as this massive political commentator or anything like that. As some of you can probably tell, I'm more interested in the emotional journey of this movement and people. And yeah, so you don't need to have a woman who is completely on the ball, or even like Lauren Southern, for example, she's, you know, a rare case. Most women, they want to feel loved, they want to feel safe, and they want a family, and they want to express themselves. And I think even, you know, hormonally, we're more built that way, and that's okay, that's fine.
And also the other thing is, I've had a lot of guys write me and say, hey, your show's red-pilled my girlfriend. Thanks for that. I've been doing a lot of shows with women lately, and it's great because a lot of the guys can share it with their girlfriends and their sisters and their mothers, and that's another good thing. You know, just let them hear other girls talking about it, so kind of does a little deprogramming yeah. them from the norm and get them to think a little different, because what we're talking about is common sense. It's what aligns with our yeah. femininity and our nature, and it will click on some level when they hear it. They just have
For
to
sure.
hear it.
I know. I've had women reach out to me, people who describe themselves as left wing, and there are a lot of women that are very interested in these ideas. And I do think that actually talking about feminism, I know we're all a little bit bored of it, but for a lot of people, it's a really great gateway to debunk a lot of left-wing ideology with people. It's less offensive to people, unless they're, of course, like super, super feminist. But for a lot of women, they don't mind talking about these issues. It's a nice gateway. So I still think there is value in talking about feminism with women, and then you can kind of, once you've shown and exposed the hypocrisy and the lies, they have doubts about, well, what else is the left wing teaching that is wrong? And so it can be a really good way to get women interested in talking about these ideas.
It's true. And your average housewife who says she's a feminist, when you ask her what that really means, she's like, well, you know, women being equal. And I was like, well, can you name one place in the West, in white countries, where we're not equal? And then they can't do it. And then I say, well, you know, it was thanks to, you know, our white culture and men that have propped us up. Our women have been the first to go into space and to be billionaires and fly planes and drive cars. And it's our men who have facilitated us. I mean, we're the ultimate privileged ones, you know, women in white societies, absolutely up on a pedestal. But yeah, it's true. Sure. It could be a gateway and take them into other areas. That's a big topic. Well, last question for you. I know you're also passionate about reaching normies, and I think that we've been talking about that. But since, you know, you're fairly new into these things, and it's good to step back and remember where we all came from and how we came here. So any advice for talking to newcomers or people you think are on the fence that we can convert over into our side?
Yeah, so I love normies, and because I identify with them. I was a normie myself. And so what we need to do is really have an honest human conversation with these people, talk about the things they're worried about, talk about the things that keep them up at night, and make an emotional connection with people. Let them know that you care. And then from there, you can start to have these conversations, because if they know that you are a decent person, they are less likely to be put off by what you're saying, and they're going to be more open. And remember that what you are selling to people is a better life, a better way of feeling about themselves and the world. And if you focus on that first, then you are much more likely to get a positive response, because people at the end of the day, they just want to feel good.
Yeah, and I think it was Philosophicat, your friend, who was also on my show, brought up a good point to listen. You just have to sit there and listen so that they feel really heard. And I find a good approach is just to ask simple, gentle questions back, because the truth is on our side. We know what all those double standards are. We know what the weak points are, so we can just keep it really simple and just question some of those weak points. And a lot of times you'll have people say, I don't have an answer for that, or good point, or I don't know. So it's good. We can't be intellectually lazy. We can't let these people slide either. When you're in these conversations, you almost have to hold people to it. You know, don't let them go.
For sure. Exactly.
Well, it's been great having you here today. I've really enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you.
Let people know how they can find your YouTube channel and your Twitter and everything else.
Yeah, so I'm on YouTube as Gorgo Channel. I'm on Twitter as Gorgo Channel, and also I have a Facebook page, Gorgo Channel, which I'm much more active on. You're more likely to get in touch with me on my Facebook page or on my YouTube, but I do use Twitter from time to time as well.
All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on your YouTube channel. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
We'll have you back again sometime soon.
Thanks, Lana. Thank you.
Thanks to Red Ice members who make this show possible. Red Ice is expanding, and we need all of your support in order to make that happen. We are up against a massive anti-white propaganda machine. We cannot make a bigger impact without all of you. It's time to step it up. Most of what we do is free. It's your Red Ice membership that enables us to bring on more people. So please head on over to redicemembers.com. For the price of a fancy mocha a month, you can help us fight back. We have our real names and faces out there, and we work tirelessly for a better future for all of you. Thanks for watching. Yeah.